everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is David Lipscomb, Director of Strategic Communications for Pro Bono Institute. Today, PBI's law firm Pro Bono Project introduces the Pro Bono Happy Hour, a new series of podcasts in which we highlight law firm Pro Bono Challenge signatories and law firm Pro Bono Project members. During these podcasts, we'll be discussing the great pro bono work these firms are doing and sharing best practices. Our goal is to educate and inspire you while making your commute, lunch break, workday, or downtime a bit more interesting. We begin our series with Lauren Schmidt, Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck's first pro bono partner. She spoke to us about her role at the firm, the evolution of the firm's pro bono program, and its short-term and long-term goals. Get comfortable, have a listen, and we hope you enjoy the interview. Hi, Lauren. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate you giving us some of your time. Just want to jump right in and say, you know, tell us about yourself, your firm, and your firm's pro bono program.
Hi, Dave. It's good to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to PBI. I am the pro bono partner for Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck. We're a Denver-based law firm with approximately 250 attorneys across the country. So most of our offices are in the western United States. We also have a significant government relations practice in Washington, D.C.
Jumping into sort of the pro bono program, what is the governance structure of the program? Is there a committee? Is it sort of done nationally? Is it done by office? How does that work?
We established a pro bono committee in approximately 2008, and the pro bono program was run by committee until early 2012, when our then managing partner decided that it would be a good idea to create a pro bono partner position, which was a new position for our firm, and he asked me to step in and fill that. So when I first took that role, that was about 50% of my time, and about 50% of my time was my commercial litigation practice. The pro bono partner position has grown, and it is about 75% of my time now, although I still keep some of my commercial clients. So I effectively run the pro bono committee from an administrative standpoint, but we still have a committee structure, and we have at least one committee representative in each of our major offices.
Okay, that's interesting. What was the motivation behind creating the pro bono partner position?
When we were, so credit to Brownstein, when we tackle something, we normally tend to go all in on it. The real genesis of our formal pro bono program in around 2008 was a pledge that the Colorado Supreme Court was asking our Colorado attorneys to commit to actively commit to doing 50 or more pro bono hours per attorney per year. And we signed on to that and agreed to do it, and that kind of led to the creation of the pro bono committee. And we were finding that, first, the pro bono initiative, to some extent, was largely Denver-focused. We've always had a large pro bono program in our Las Vegas office, but outside of those two offices, we weren't getting as much traction, or I would say we just hadn't invested as much. So there was a sense that we wanted to create a position that would be more firm-wide. And the other part of it was that we were struggling to figure out how to get to that 50-hour average per attorney. We were getting close, but we weren't quite getting there. And I had been active on the pro bono committee for quite some time, and along with the chair of our committee, had a conversation with our managing partner in which we pointed out that larger firms that have very robust and successful pro bono programs normally tend to have a lawyer or, at a minimum, a non-lawyer professional that's running that program. And honestly, I think when we had that conversation, we never really thought that we were big enough to make that kind of investment at this point. And to our managing partner's credit, he came back and said, you know, I think that's a great idea. I think we should do it. And Lauren, I'd be happy to tap you for that.
Wow. That's good to hear. And I imagine that you have sort of made the traction that you were looking to make, particularly in the other offices.
We have. I mean, one of the most rewarding things for me has been seeing the participation in our other offices really grow in the past couple of years. And I also just really enjoy that part of my job, being able to work with all of our attorneys around the firm. But we have seen the success. We have more than doubled our pro bono hours as a firm since 2008, and our pro bono hours have been going up every year. And so I think we've certainly seen the traction with this position.
Well, that's certainly something we like to hear, and that we hear the pro bono hours are going up. Sort of in that same vein, how is pro bono celebrated and acknowledged at the firm? I mean, clearly you all are paying attention. So what are the things that you do to make sure that folks within the firm see that you're doing the work and that it's, you know, there for them to participate in as well?
That's a great question. It's something that we're always looking at. I think people tend to respond well to the recognition, and just as you know, right, to have a good pro bono program, you need to publicize it and make sure that people know that the opportunities are out there. So we give an automatic credit for up to 100 hours of pro bono work for our associates, billable credit toward their billable minimum, and we'll give more than that in certain circumstances. And we have also made pro bono a subject on our annual partner compensation reviews. So every year when we go through the partnership review process, our partners have to say what they've done or not on the pro bono front. So it's at least an annual reminder for the partners that this is one of our expectations for our partners as well. We give out annual 50-hour pro bono awards. So we have a trophy for every attorney that hits that 50-hour benchmark, which I try to hand-deliver whenever I can.
And who doesn't like having a trophy on the shelf, right?
Yeah, and lawyers love trophies. So it's always a great day when I get to hand those out, and then it makes people notice and say, man, I really want to get one of those next year. We also have a Pro Bono Attorney of the Year Award that we give out at our all-attorney retreat, where we recognize an attorney and really almost always an associate who we feel has contributed the most to the pro bono program, and that comes with a healthy cash bonus and a donation to a nonprofit of the associate's choice. We use our all-attorney retreat as an opportunity to showcase a lot of our great pro bono stories. We also recently have started adding a pro bono segment to our monthly firm newsletter. So we have an e-newsletter that goes out once a month that highlights a lot of the firm accomplishments, and we have a monthly pro bono spotlight that we use to highlight some of the great work we're doing around the firm.
Well, that's a perfect segue. So speaking of highlights and victories, over the past 6 to 12 months or whatever comes to mind, what are you most proud of? What are some of your biggest successes?
I would take sort of a longer view than the 6 to 12 months for our program, because I think one of the things that I'm most proud of is, like I said before, how we've managed to increase participation and increase attorney hours every year, which is still one of my fundamental goals. I think we're very entrepreneurial about pro bono work, and we like our attorneys to do what they're passionate about. So just working with those individual attorneys that maybe haven't been engaged before, helping them find out how they want to get engaged, and then setting them on that path, to me, is one of the most rewarding things, and I think our numbers reflect our success. One other way that we recognize pro bono, and that I would also put in the success category that I think is very novel for Brownstein, is that we have a first-year apprentice program where our true first-year associates that are coming in from our summer associate program are under a different billable hour metric than the vast majority of our associates. And one of the things that we've built in for our first years is a 200-hour pro bono component. So they're not only expected but required to do at least 200 hours of pro bono in their first year, which is a huge driver for the pro bono program. And it's fantastic training, and all of the reasons that we talk about the business case for pro bono, I think that makes sense. But it also, our associates love it, and it also gives them the opportunity to start taking pro bono work, meaningful pro bono work, very early in their career. And it's very early in the program, but I suspect that the attorneys that come through that program will keep doing pro bono for the rest of their careers.
Definitely. I feel like you've been you somehow got a copy of my notebook, because that takes me right into my next question. We talk about developing core competencies and professional development, and I was just wondering if you can go a little bit more in detail about that, and particularly, for the associates in the program you just described, about how pro bono helps those associates develop skills that they might not have otherwise learned, which we hear, time and time again at various firms.
Right. So There's so many answers to that question. It's hard to know where to even start. But I think so the first thing that comes to mind for me is just the opportunity for associates to manage their own case, right? And the extent to which the associates are running the pro bono case obviously depends on the case. I mean, that's not going to be true generally for our larger impact litigation type cases. But it's certainly true for our smaller cases and for a lot of our transactional work where we represent a lot of nonprofit clients. And I think just the opportunity to give the associate a lot of rein and maybe more than we might be able to give them with a lot of our billable clients, and to be the point person for that client relationship and to really have the 10,000-foot view of what it means to be in charge of a case is critically important. I also think, just sort of on a more mundane level, you know, that once you become a partner at a law firm, you forget that associates don't have a lot of exposure or visibility into very basic things like what it means to open a matter or draft an engagement letter or review their bills and, you know, very things that the partners deal with every day and that the associates don't really. And it gives them that opportunity to sort of see 360 degrees what goes into the intake process and the client management process and the invoice process. And I think, you know, that in and of itself is valuable. In addition to the substantive skills that our associates are getting on the cases. I mean, that sort of very obvious things, but, you know, we try to get our litigation associates into court. I mean, often their first court appearances, their first trials are on pro bono matters. For transactional associates, we try to give them ownership of a local nonprofit client, and it enables them to see sort of all of the issues that that client presents instead of maybe, you know, an issue-by-issue slice.
Yeah, very interesting. And sounds extremely helpful to young lawyers that are looking to develop these new skills. Let me change gears a little bit here. Other than, you know, the increasing amount of pro bono getting done, sort of what has changed most since you've been in your position, and particularly with you having been the first person in that position?
What has changed for the firm, or
what has changed maybe about the position? How have you shaped it, basically, in performing your duties, and perhaps what has happened in the firm that's changed?
So one of the great things about being the first person in a position like this is that it's really entrepreneurial, right? So it's been a really great opportunity to shape what the position is and what the program is. But I think what we found is having someone in this position instead of trying to run this by committee. And I will say I have a fabulous pro bono committee, and I love our structure because I have basically a lot of little mini-me's in each of our major offices that do my position in those offices and can be the eyes and ears on the ground in the office and it really can do a ton of the work that I do in Denver when I'm not there. So I love that structure. But just having one person to report to who has, you know, I have the luxury of doing that as my job, right, and our other pro bono committee members don't. And I think it's just sort of not only increased the efficiency of the program, but increased the visibility of the program. And now everyone in the firm knows who the point person is to go to on pro bono issues. And if our attorneys, you know, find themselves with some time and they're looking for a project, they automatically know who to call, which has meant that I think we get people involved more quickly, you know, which ultimately is a benefit to the program. Another thing I would add is that it being in this position has allowed me to take a much sort of higher level view of how we can make a real impact through our pro bono work. And we have, as a firm, we've looked at taking on firm-wide pro bono initiatives, and we haven't found a good one that fits yet. But what I am finding is that we have a lot of office-wide initiatives, and we're moving more toward a model where we're trying to get a large chunk of our attorneys in any given market working on one particular program that resonates with them and where we've identified a need in the cities where we're operating. And that's not really anything that happened before. I think being a part of the PBI, certainly, which is new for us and which we're thrilled about, and me being a part of the Association of Pro Bono Counsel has given us the ability to tap into what's happening on a national front and what the hot button pro bono issues of the day are, and to be able to take that and use that in our cities where we have offices And we have a very different geographic footprint than most of the firms that are members of PBI. So at places like Albuquerque and Las Vegas and Phoenix, where you just don't see a big law firm presence. And so that's both a challenge and an opportunity, but you don't see a lot of PBI representation coming out of those cities, and so it lets us be kind of the first line of defense, if you will, as we see real areas of need coming up.
Right. Well, it looks like our time is winding down here a little bit, but I think maybe this would be a good question to end on, considering what you just said. Sort of, what's in the crystal ball? What's on the pro bono horizon? And sort of in the context of you know, saying you have a bit of a different geographic footprint, what is next for you all? What's the next big project or the next big move?
That's a great question. I think it's one that we're always looking at. And I can't tell you that I have a definitive answer today. But to kind of go back to what I just said, I really think we're moving more toward identifying signature projects that not only fit with our skill sets, but where we've identified a pressing need in the communities where we operate. So we've been doing quite a bit of immigration work out of Denver, which we don't do on a paying basis. We only do on a pro bono basis. And I expect we'll continue to do more of that in Denver and in our other markets, since we have a big presence in the American Southwest, where there's a lot of need for immigration help. We're starting to get very involved in the pro bono patent program through the federal circuit. We have a relatively new but very large patent prosecution group here in Denver that's interested in working on those programs, so we're hoping to be one of the leading firms in Denver on the patent work. And in general, I'm always looking for the right impact litigation and sort of figuring out what big litigation matters we want to try to tackle at any given point in time.
That all sounds great. Lauren, I want to thank you again for giving your time this afternoon to talk with us. We'll be sure to be looking out for your firm as you make the next moves.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
We hope you enjoyed the very first installment of the Pro Bono Happy Hour as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Many thanks to the brave Lauren Schmidt, pro bono partner at Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck, for being our guinea pig and the first of many guests to come. To listen to more podcasts in this series or learn about additional pro bono resources, visit www.probonoinst.org/podcasts. If you're interested in having your firm featured on the Pro Bono Happy Hour, please email us at probono@probonoinst.org. Thanks again for listening, and join us again next time.